True Crime Radio is brought to you by DBI Media, FetLifeRadioStation.com, and Prison Production. This episode is produced by Joey DeVille, Dawn Michelle Chamberlain, and executive producer, Pulitzer Prize winner, Suave Gonzalez.
Yo, what's up, people? Y'all know what it is. This your boy, Suave. Pulitzer Prize winner, DBI Live, FetLife, all the major platforms. Today, we got a very special guest. Playtime is over. If you don't believe me, she's in the house. We seen her in Vegas. We seen her everywhere on the platforms. But now she's here. DBI Live, Dawn Michelle Chamberlain. Yo, and let me say something, people, for those that don't know. She is the newest addition to DBI Media.
Hey! Hey, yeah!
So, we here. What's going on, sis?
What's up? Good morning.
I don't know. You tell me.
Buenos dias. I don't even know all that.
I mean, I see you got your book.
Got my book.
You've been going around.
I'm promoting
making
the book.
It jump,
yeah.
Promoting mm-hmm. the book. But do the people know the backstory to the book? You know, a lot of time we see people that sell books, good covers, thick books, and really, you know, we don't know the backstory. You know, so today we want to know who is Dawn Michelle Chamberlain. And you know, let's get it. What book this book about?
So, well, let me just say this first. I do got one hell of a cover, don't I? Y'all like that cover? I look about 26, don't I? That's what I was going for. We nailed it, right?
Yeah. You nailed the cover.
I nailed it. So, yeah. The book, the backstory to the book. Well, the book is just a small introduction to me and my story, right? I just kind of like a little teaser, if you will. It's about mindset. It's about motivation. And it gives you action steps on how to start your business legitimately. And the reason I chose to write about this at this time was because of basically a part of my story. I'm a fat baby like you.
Always.
Yeah, I'm a fat baby like you.
So what can the readers expect when they open page one?
When they open page one, from the rip, they're going to get right to the action. You know, it's talks about how I actually was driving myself to prison. It talks about that moment when I was driving down, you know, into the mountains to drop myself off to federal prison and how
so,
I felt
hold
at that
on, backtrack.
Back it up.
Before you even drove yourself to the mountain,
mm-hmm.
you know, where you from?
So I was raised in Chester, Pennsylvania. Yeah, Chester, Pennsylvania.
So you was born in Chester, small city.
No, I was actually born in Charleston, West Virginia.
Oh.
Coincidentally.
Okay.
Where I went to prison at, and I was brought to Chester
so
as
you
a young child.
Chester. Okay.
Right, and I was raised in Chester, Pennsylvania, yes.
And how was your upbringing?
So my upbringing, it was okay. And I'm going to say that because it started off pretty good. Two-parent household. You know, we came here. My parents were the first homeowners of color on our block, doing very well, you know, for ourselves. And then addiction set into the household. My father began drinking really heavily and using drugs, and things started going left in the family unit. So things started getting difficult for us.
So when you say left, that means you had to go fiend for yourself?
I had to fend for ourselves. I'm talking about like electric off, water off. You know, it was in a time where we went without having a running kitchen and, you know, toilets broken and just roaches infested. You know, just a lot
Sound
of neglect.
Like my home in
yeah,
the Bronx.
And not a neglect because he was feeding his addiction. My mother, it was four of us, four girls, and my mother would work when she could, but it was hard to work and manage four girls, cat watching. You know how hard that is. And, also having the challenges of an addict in the household and having to protect us from so many things. So it was difficult. So early on, I had to learn to be independent and figure things out for myself and for my siblings and to help my mother and my father, who I never gave up on, incidentally. Always hoped and prayed that he would come through from his addiction, which he did. you know, as part of the story you'll see years later. But yeah, that's how it went. So I was always, I had to learn how to be independent and move and shake quickly.
So when you say independent move and shake, what that consists of in Chester?
In Chester, that consists of figuring it out and figuring out how to get the bag and how to actually have your voice, make yourself known, be relevant so people can remember who you are so that you can present and provide opportunities for yourself. You know, you gotta move and shake. You gotta be present, and you know, let people know that you are somebody, and so you can be considered for whatever, whatever the case may be. So for me, that looked like being highly involved and participating in community events, extracurricular activities at the school, anything that I could participate in where I could be a part of a community and also my voice heard and be known and establish relationships and authority in those community circles. I was down with that.
So it sounded like you had a pretty upbringing.
Maybe.
But at the same time, you know, let's be more clear.
Mm-hmm.
I want to know how you got to the bag. You know, I mean, because I'm pretty sure you're on DBI Live, Deaf Blind Cross Spaces.
Okay, okay,
most of the
okay.
people that listen to our show are people that's been impacted by the system.
Correct, correct.
And a lot of time we see people that come out, they successful, they get involved, but people don't know the backstory.
Okay.
And I think that it's important that people hear the backstory, like, yeah, I was here, I'm here now, but it was a process to get here. You know, how you got here now? How you got to become the writer? I mean, you was a lot of things before.
Right, right,
that.
Right.
But, you know, tell us a little bit about that life.
The life to get into the bag that got me to the joint?
Yeah.
Or the first person getting to the
bag?
Life. The first person getting to the bag was selling cigarettes on the block. Stealing my dad's cigarettes, stealing his J's. He used to leave them roaches in the drawer and stuff. And around, I would steal them out of his ashtray and go sell them. You know what I mean? For a couple of dollars or whatever. Then next was, you know, all survival mode. We used to shoplift our asses off. You know what I mean? Go stealing and stuff from Strawbridge's, Macy's, Bloomingdale's, all them stores.
So the bag started growing
it
with the cigarettes,
growing,
shoplifting,
everything.
You know.
All of that. Got banged for that, booked for that. And then I chilled out for a little bit, you know, at work or whatever, like a regular person. And I said, well, went to school. And then I started, when I went to school for a public health track. And
for the audience, how many degrees you got?
1, 2, 3, 4.
Okay.
Yeah, 4.
I just want to make sure. So the young ladies that's viewing us understand that we talking to somebody.
Oh, yeah. I got a...
That went to school.
I went to
school.
And
got like 4 master's degrees.
I got an associate's, bachelor's, and 2 master's.
Oh, look at that.
Master's in public health, master's in
beat
business.
Beat me.
A bachelor's in allied health communications.
Find someone that beat me.
And my associate's was in... liberal arts and, you know, minor in education and theater and all these things. Blah, blah. I actually went to Temple, Westchester, and, you know, I've been up here in these streets. So what happened was I was in the field for that public health track, and again, I love the community, always did, so I was working in the community. I was in a leadership position in nonprofit organization, and I was there. You couldn't tell me nothing. That was where I started, and that was where I was going to finish, until one day... We got called into a meeting in the office, emergency meeting, and we were told that our grants had been exhausted and it was going to be our last day at work. So now I'm like, okay, what am I getting ready to do? Right? So everything like hit the floor at that point. All shit hit the floor. I had no plan. I had no money saved because I was basically living from check to check and just doing me, just not really being financially responsible because I had that income coming in. It was consistent. And I didn't think that that would be ever taken away from me. So I had to scramble, and that looked like me getting kind of thrown into entrepreneurship at that point. So what I did was I took the skills that I had, and a lot of it was from work that I did in the community and with the local nonprofits, and I started my first business, which was a party business, Kid Caters Entertainment. And then I simultaneously launched my tax service. Now, the taxes began while I was in a nonprofit. That's why I learned and trained and started doing that. It was in the 90s when I started doing tax returns. This was before they even had electronic e-filing. We were doing paper returns for people that came in and helping people in the community file their taxes. So I had a significant amount of clients already and a strong knowledge of the tax system. So I started that simultaneously, and that's where it began, the tax business. is what got me in the shit.
explain that. Break that down. I don't think.
Well, you see,
I want people to understand, right?
It was some things and things, you know.
Listen, but I want people to understand that a lot of time, right? Mm-hmm. We get put in situations where we got to do what we got to do to survive. Mm-hmm. Right? It don't mean that we bad people. It just means that we make the wrong decisions to survive, and that's what it is. I mean, don't get it twisted.
My ass was surviving and being really suave.
That too. I want to know about all that. But there's a lot of time that... There's a lot of time. I know people that's been in jail for tax evasion. Mm-hmm. They get 6 months. I know people that... Same crime, look like me, get 10 years.
Right.
So this is disparity and who commit the crime.
Right.
But nevertheless, don't try this at home, people.
Don't do it.
Don't do it.
They'll come get you.
Exactly. She about to tell you, they come get you.
Yeah. So it wasn't for tax evasion. It was for tax fraud. Fraud against the IRS.
Even worse.
Even worse. Do not try this at home. So, this is what I say when I'm on them other people's platforms. I say, I was operating my business out of compliance. I did some things that were unethical, and I pretty much had to answer for that. You know, it looked like me being indicted by the federal justice system and having to go and turn myself into custody. But really, y'all, let me tell y'all what happened. And I'm laughing because I can be transparent with y'all, right? No, we folks,
listen,
we family,
man,
right?
Listen, it's over now. Right? We've done the time.
So I have my tax business, and you already know, in our communities, tax time is like Christmas. It's like one of the biggest times of the year. It's like the only time where you see, besides Christmas, and Christmas even has some sadness to it because people don't have, but it's the time where people come up. You know what I mean? The floodgates and the money from the government is basically accessible to everybody. And I was Santa, ho, baby. You better know it. What? And I like that, though. That made me feel good. It was something about being able to provide these blessings to people when they were in these, you know, bonds. You know what I mean? That made me feel good. It was like I was enjoying serving others, and I just took it too damn far. You know what I mean? I took it too damn far. And I was manipulating the tax returns and the credits. And, you know, I was that girl. I was Robin Hood. You know, and anybody and everybody you can think of, I had thousands of clients that were coming through, you know, regular local people from the community, business owners, corporate people, you name it, the pastor at the church, this person, that person.
Hallelujah.
Like all the people. I can't disclose their information, you know, their identities, but yeah, they were there. All of them, y'all know. And it was just crazy. It was like, it was off the chain. And it was, like you said, I made it rain money in the community and to the people, and they liked me, and they was messing with me because of that, and it felt good. And what I found out was that I had an addiction to that feeling of helping people. So that euphoria that I got, that attention that I got, and it was addiction
to
helping
money.
People. No, it was the helping people.
Okay,
it was the helping people, and then the money came second. The money came second, because even with the money, I did things to help people. You know what I mean? So that's how I knew that the addiction was, in fact, it wasn't just the money. Money was like secondary. It was that addiction to that feeling of being valued, of being of service, being appreciated. And it went back to when my father started his addiction and the neglect. Mm. And the void that wasn't filled from that. And from my mother, when she neglected us because of the things that were going on, and she was in her space, and just the attention wasn't there. So it was something that I was missing that I didn't even realize, you know, the trauma that I had experienced that I hadn't identified with, that was now, you know, playing out years later in my behavior and in my thinking. And I was seeking that internally. And this opportunity and this space and this role that I played gave me that and fulfilled that void for me. And I just loved doing it and kept doing it and kept doing it. Kept seeking that validation and seeking that attention.
So were you surprised when they came for you knocking at that door?
Well, I wasn't surprised per se, because I knew they were coming. You know, my investigation lasted about 5, maybe 6 years. So I knew that whole time that they were on their way. Then the day they came, yes, I didn't know what day they were coming.
Tell us about that day. What was you doing?
Okay, so.
What was you doing? Were you relaxing?
It was like
was you 6 cooking,
o'clock in the morning.
Counting that money that you make rain?
No, I wasn't counting any money. Anything. I was home in the bed. Actually, me and my two children were in the bed, and I had taken a shower the night before and was just laying in bed. I ain't even had no clothes on. I was just straight sleep in the bed, and the sun hadn't even come yet. And here's somebody coming in my bedroom door and feet trampling all in my house. I'm like, what the hell is that? And I look up, and it's the head agent that was heading the case that I had seen many times before and had spoken to several times throughout the five-year history. You know, so I'm like, yeah, good morning. We here. I'm here. Mm. You know, so actually I look up, and they're all, you know, coming into my bedroom and guns blazing, and they're all out inside the house and, you know, running through the house like ants. You know, snipers on the roof outside, cars everywhere and stuff. American Most Wanted. Made a whole, it was a big production. Oh, yeah. It was grand. What happened next?
Yeah.
I said, well, first of all, get the hell out of my room. I ain't got no clothes. One of my kids is in here asleep. You know what I mean? Thank God my kids slept through it. They didn't hear any of it. Thank goodness, because I don't know, you know, what they would have felt or thought seeing those guns and people in the house and, you know, what was going on. So they stepped out of the room so I could put some clothes on. And then I came on out and, you know, went downstairs and let them, you know, put the handcuffs on me. And we got in the car and went off to the federal building and I got processed.
And how was that process?
Well, considering I had been arrested before.
Yeah, but being arrested but that by process, the feds.
Right, so.
You know, let me break something down, people. When you get arrested by the police and, you know, for shit, a lot of them just lazy. So they just take you to the prison, uncuff you, put you in the room the next shift. But when you get arrested by the feds, they make a production out of it.
Oh, it's a whole production.
It's news. Mm-hmm. It's who's
helicopters
the
and
agents
shit.
Get selected. Who's the one that's going to be in the folder with you?
Yep.
Who's the one? I mean, it's like rehearsing this stuff. Mm-hmm. How I know this, because I was in the feds. And I wasn't even in the feds for a federal crime. I was in the feds for the Camp Hill riot. And they treated it as like we was like, and this was like the first time that I was put on a plane in cuffs with a black box. And I was told I was high security. High security? What the fuck? I mean high security? And then we was find out that the state put a memo in our records that we burned the jail down. And at that time, Camp Hill was riding, Atlanta Prison was riding. So that we was like, highlight. And man, listen, I'm telling you, it's not a funny feeling when you get to them jails and they strip you. when I mean strip, they go in your toenails. They put you in a machine where they could just photograph your inside, make sure you ain't got nothing. That whole process is crazy. So how was it for somebody, you know, you like, for this? Because that's what I would say.
It was
saying.
Ridiculous. It definitely was ridiculous. Like I said, they had snipers on the roof. Cars everywhere, helicopters. Like you would have thought, it was like I was like the school shooter, and they had a team set up on two different streets because I had two properties, so they didn't know which house I was in. So they had Team A and Team B. So I found that out later that the whole neighborhood, like a, you know, 2 mile proximity, was lit up with.
Don't come out. She's gonna make it rain again. Mm-hmm.
So
okay.
Actually, though, you know what? They were actually pretty classy about it. They're pretty classy about it. So we got in the car. Like I said, I got dressed or whatever, you know.
What's the agent flirting? You know, them agents like to flirt.
Was he coming over as flirting? I can't remember. I probably was flirting with them. You know, I was some shit. I was some shit. But so we got in the car and we were talking, you know, just having a conversation. He was... did he say we went and got me some coffee?
Ooh,
you know, asked me if I was hungry. Yeah, asked me if I was hungry. Got me a breakfast sandwich. We rode over because we were waiting for the federal building to open. Like the, you know, but we still had time. You know what I mean? So we, once we did that, then we went down to the federal building. But mind you, we had already had a relationship. It had been 5 years that me and him were, you know, dealing. So it was, it wasn't, it was just a little different, in my opinion. I would think, and if it's a total stranger coming to lock you up. Now, you, we know each other. You knew my family. You knew everything about me. Had been in the community and everywhere. So he knew me. You know what I mean? So I'd be like, what's up, unk? You know what I mean? Like, hey, what's what we doing? You finally here to get me type of shit. So you're like, yeah. So, you know, we could talk about anything but what you locking me up for. And we, that's what we did in the car. And then when we got there, I went, it took you down to the tunnel underneath the building. You go inside. Mind you, I'm in this big black Suburban, like feeling like the president and shit. You know, you go in. They bring you in. I did like the fingerprints and all that kind of stuff. I did my pictures. They sit me in a cell. It was a cell. They came out and asked me, did I want a cheese sandwich and shit at this point, but I had already eaten. And then I waited. I had to wait to go see the judge. It was, the cell was shit. Any cell was shit.
It wasn't home, right?
It wasn't home. It's cold. It's fucking cement. It's
because everybody thinks the fish is the shit. Fish is worse than this.
Yeah, it was, you know, people had started coming in the building. Was now open. It was like about 8 o'clock now. So now all the other officers and everything are coming in, and it's just getting busy. And I'm just sitting there like fuck. So the thing I'm worrying about is, you know, what's going on back at the house with my kids. What's going on with my husband? I wasn't really worrying about me. Strangely enough, I was just kind of like worrying about everybody else. Everybody else. So I kept asking, you know, what was going on. Could I call? And, you know, just being like a mom, I guess, and like that, you know, that person. Then I had to go and see the judge. And they took my ass to the county.
Which one?
I went Delaware. Delaware.
Bad.
Now that's you. Now you're all of a. Oh, you know, I did get strip searched. I did get strip searched.
Oh, yeah, I knew that.
You know, strip searched, went through my hair, bend over, cough, fart, all that. You know, touch your ankles, lift your boobs up, spread your lips, the whole nine. Bring somebody else in there to double check.
So hold up. When they strip search a female, is it the same process that they use for the males?
I'm not sure. What's the male process?
Bend over, spread them ass cheeks. Pull your dick out, push the skin back, lift your balls, cough, hold up, do that shit again. Oh yeah, it's bad. And so, then the crazy part that I never understood, they make you spread your ass cheeks first. Like, you gotta spread them.
Mm-hmm.
But then they ask you to take your two fingers
and put them in your mouth.
And put them in your mouth.
Put them in your ass.
I'm like, nah, I'm not doing that shit, man.
Let me show you. I can show you better than I can tell you. So it goes like
show,
this.
Show the camera.
Let me show the people. So stand over like this, doing one of these. You got to hold your breasts up like that, spread them out, do that. And then you turn around, you know what I mean? And you got to bend over like this. And then you got to squat like this. And you got to hold it open like this and call. And like this. And then like that. Yeah, yeah, get it all out. You know what I mean? Turn around. Like this, check you. Toes, all that stuff, mouth, ears, hair, here. And then they bring somebody else in to do it all over again to double check behind you.
Yeah.
And you like this, stand there like this so to make sure nothing's in your vagina.
Yep.
Or whatever the case may be. And yeah, that's what they do.
Yeah, listen, young ladies.
Asshole naked.
Young ladies, if you don't think this can happen to you.
And if you're on your cycle, it don't matter, you're just gonna be dripping.
Could happen to anyone, you know, and I know we having fun up here with it, right? We
but done
that
serious, time.
We
yeah.
did that. We did that, right? But on some real shit, it's get worse than that. Because a lot of time, people, the slick people, oh, they're going to lock me up. I'm going to swallow some balloons. I'm going to stuff this up. Man, they got a metal chair where they sit you down. It's like an x-ray chair. Everything. It's like going to the airport. Everything. They could determine what you got in your stomach, anything. You can't hide nothing going in the face. So, you get through the process. The people, they already knew you was coming.
They knew.
Because most of the time, the people like, such and such is coming, you know, the word gets around.
At the county, I was the Black Martha Stewart is here. The Black Martha Stewart is here. Or inside the prison, too. The feds. But then when I got to the county, it was like, so the feds, the ones that were inside the building, that were outside of the investigation team that I had already known, didn't talk too much. You know, they didn't have too much to say. They were like, you know, working and doing whatever. The only ones that I really had a conversation with were the people that I had known from investigating, the postal investigators and all those people that were there as part of the, you know, welcome committee, right?
So which federal detention center you went to? The one in Delaware?
I was in Delaware, right.
So did you run into somebody you know that you helped with their taxes?
No, I didn't see anybody there that day.
You didn't see none of them?
Nobody there that day. They had come maybe a week or so prior to see the grand jury and testify against me. So they separated us. So I wasn't there the same day that they were there. But yeah, they had all come in to see the grand jury prior to me getting there.
How many people testify against you?
Seven.
Dang. Seven. What's the name? No names out.
I know them all, but yeah, I'm not.
I'm just saying for the people out there that's listening, they might, you know, because I think a lot of time people, I always say, if you're not built for this life, don't even get involved. Right, because when you come to somebody to do some illegal shit, you already know there's some illegal shit going on. So you, that mean you part of it. Don't wait till you get caught for a traffic stop or some other shit to give up the tapes. Cause that's fucked up. Yeah. I always thought that was fucked up.
Yeah.
Like everybody know my story. I went to jail for 31 years for some shit I ain't even do.
I ain't even do.
And I see the motherfucker. They did it. All the time. He's cracked out. Not even worth talking to, right? And I still won't even tell him to do. Period. You know, that's just the way I was brought up. So when I see people getting involved in different crimes, in different activities, and then they start folding because they don't want to do 6 months, should never been involved in the first place.
And I agree.
Period.
Now,
you get to the grand jury. And, you know, the fears always exaggerate shit.
Oh, my God.
If it's $1 million, they say it's $10 million. And that's how they get you. How much you said it was?
So, for the years that they could catch me on, because the statutes of limitations that ran out for many, it was like $4.5 million.
Hold on, say that again. I ain't heard that.
It was $4.5 million for the 2 years that they got me for.
No, I felt math. That's why. I can't even see what $4 million look like. I mean, were they right? Were they wrong?
I don't even know. I lost
don't
count.
Even know. That's a good answer.
I lost count.
Oh, so
that's an honest answer.
That was probably wrong.
They may have been. But you got what you got. I'm not going to do your job for you. You feel me? Exactly. You ain't going to do your job for
me. I mean, so out of this whole ordeal, how much you lost? Property value, business.
I lost everything. Everything that came in that was accounted for was gone. By the time, you know, frivolous spending, you know, stress spending, legal fees.
What's stress spending?
Stress spending is when you're stressed out and you're fucking, like, just off your fucking rocker, right? Because the fucking feds is coming and you don't know when, so you're just blowing money fast and just doing foolishness and nonsense, just running through that shit like whatever. So, you know, with no rhyme or reason, no plan, no strategy, just like, fuck it, I got 24 hours to live type shit. You know what I mean? Like, when you're just in that space, in that headspace where you don't even give a fuck. You know what I mean? Just spiraling. That.
So you go through the system, see the judge, they give you bail. How much time do you end up serving?
So they sentenced me to 51 months. Because we negotiated the number down to about $1.5 million. So they sentenced me to 51 months. And then of that 51-month sentence, I did 2 years, 2 months, 2 weeks, and 2 days.
Dang, 2-2-2.
2-2-2.
I mean, what do we have in common?
Our release dates.
Huh?
Our release dates. We just found that out. We have the same thing as it. And it's a 2.
Yep. We're not gonna reveal too much, but
but
you know, anybody
it's a
that's 2-2. Been in
two.
Anybody that's been in the feds.
And guess what? 11 November, yep. 1-1 is what?
2-2.
Everybody
knows that if you've been in the feds, 066 is PA number. That's the PA number. No matter what county you from. 066.
And I had 035 because I had Delaware.
Yes. Mm-hmm. 066. Right. So but I want people to understand, especially the ladies. Because a lot of the time, the ladies think they're going to be light on me. Man, listen, if you are considered the queen, the head of the family, however they label you, you bought that. That means that everybody that you're taking care of is probably going to walk, because they're all going to tell.
Mm-hmm.
They're all going to be given a deal where they can't refuse, such as time served, house arrest, but no jail. So you're going to see a line of your Chanel bags and your Gucci bags coming in there saying, yeah, she did it. Yeah, she told me how to do this. Right.
So the best I didn't know what was going on.
The best way to avoid the feds is to don't fucking cheat the feds.
Don't fuck with them.
Listen, it could be a dollar. And they just could ask them zero and say it was $1 million. And you can't prove them wrong.
Right.
Can't prove them wrong.
You can't.
So now you get your time. And this is the great part, people. See, in the state prison, when you get put in jail in the county with no bail, you done. You going straight upstate. They coming to pick you up. But the feds play a different ball.
They're not coming.
They play a different ball
game. They're going to leave you sitting there, motherfucker.
The feds play a different ball game. And the ball game that they play is, you know what? We're not going to spend no more money in driving you all the way to Virginia or Kentucky somewhere. We want you to turn yourself.
Bring your ass over there.
And if you late 1 minute, you got that escape charge. We're going to send these people again in the helicopter.
Let me right. Read the first part of my book since you said that. This is describing that moment, right? This is in Sell the CEO, Stop Planning, Get Your Shit Together, Get the Book, y'all. In the introduction. I took a shortcut and I got cut short. I was indicted and sentenced to 54 months in federal prison. And while driving myself to prison, I vowed never to take a shortcut again. Driving myself to prison.
How was
driving
that?
Driving myself to fucking
how was,
prison.
I want to know
what
how.
What in the entire fuck of COVID fuckery is that? Who is that? See what they want. See what they want. They want. We lie. We talking. Right?
Yo, I'm saying, how was that moment?
That's when it hit me. That moment was like, I got cut short. Like, what the
hold
fuck
on,
is going
you
on?
You woke up that morning. How was the night before?
It wasn't no sleep. I was pacing the floor, sweating, heart palpating, palms, you know, wet.
Sweating.
Sweaty. Worrying. The fear of the unknown. The fear of what's going to happen. Who am I going to run into? What's going to happen to me? Am I going to be safe? You know, what conditions am I getting into? What kind of people am I going to be around? You know, what's going to happen to me? It was devastating. It was traumatic. It wasn't a good feeling at all.
I mean, listen, this DBI Live.
What's up?
Did you get it in with your husband? Did they even came to mind like I'm gonna be away? I'm not gonna have no dick for about.
Oh, yeah,
years.
I got some dick. Damn sure did.
I mean, you know, because a lot of time we go through.
Oh, we talking about that? Are we talking like, about that? Okay.
What was that process like, knowing, like, is this nigga going to fuck around with somebody else? Or did you give him permission to do it? Like, go. You got 2 years to do whatever you got to do. You know, how was it leaving your kids behind, your mom? You know, the only life that you know.
Okay.
You leaving that behind, which includes everything.
So where do I start? You ask like three questions.
Any way
one.
You want to start.
So sex, first of all, not even leading up to the night before you leave, it was different because it was a lot of stress. You know what I mean? So sex wasn't it was kind of just the act. I guess the emotions were not really
there
okay. Like that. It was like, okay, I know we got to get this done. Let me get this up out of you. You know what I mean? Type shit, whatever. But it was just different. That's the only way I can describe it. It was, you know, the emotions were kind of different because it was stress involved and it was, you know, we were in a crisis mood. The kids, yes, did get it in the night before. If the kids wasn't in the car on the way up,
right.
That's another story. I think we might have stopped at a rest stop or something too. Matter of fact, we did. On the way there, and I'm like, come on, one more round, you know, type of shit. But just for shits and giggles and fun. But having to leave my kids was the scariest part ever. Having to trust other people with
I mean, were you scared?
I was scared as shit. I was worried. I didn't trust anybody. I didn't think anybody had any good sense. Anybody knew what they were doing or they could do my job, you know, like me and be there for my children. And it was fucked up. I felt like shit. I was very guilty. I felt, you know, really bad and stupid for having to leave. And I was powerless. There was nothing I could do about it. I was fucked. I was like, what am I going to do? But yeah,
Because you can't prepare for prison.
You can't prepare. You know, you people can't prepare.
Because they gave me time to get your affairs together.
Ain't no
There's
such thing.
There's no preparation in the world.
None.
For you to go to prison.
You never know what's going to happen.
Especially turning yourself in.
You never know what's going to happen.
Did you think about running? Like, I should just fucking go?
I thought about running. You know, what would that look like? Yes. Where would I go? How would I get there? Of course, those thoughts, you know, cross your mind. And then what would happen after the fact? And once I thought about it, I'm like, nah, it ain't worth it. I might as well just go and deal with this shit because then you'll be running forever.
So you get to prison, strip search again, right?
Oh, yeah, you got strip search again. So rewind, you were asking about the weekend before. So what happened was we had a party, which was the craziest shit ever, right? You know, our people's always having a fucking party, right? So I was saying, all right.
That's what we do.
We're having a farewell, bon voyage. I said off to see the wizard. That's what I called it. Off to see the wizard. Hoorah, right?
In the Puerto Rican community, if you die,
it's a party.
It's a party. If you bone,
it's a party.
If you get shot and survive,
it's a party.
So either way, there's a party.
It's a freaking party.
You know, if you go to jail, it's like some people is like, man, we happy that motherfucker went to jail. When you come out, it's a bigger party. Party. That's real rap.
It is. It is. You know, it's so twisted shit, right?
And I think that's a shame because it's twisted. Here we are celebrating somebody getting put in a cage. We don't look at it that way.
Right.
Because we in the other side. It's like, we're going to have fun. But it's like, you fucking celebrated me being treated like an animal right now. Because that's what's about to happen. Because people think because you're going to the fairs, it's golf courts, swimming pools.
It's still none of that. Fucking prison.
It's jail.
It's jail.
It's jail. If you accustomed to a lifestyle that don't consist with bars, it's jail.
It's jail.
If you don't know what oodles and noodles taste like with sardines,
it's jail.
It's jail.
And we had, what's the other one? Mackerel.
Mackerel.
The mackerel. Stinking ass mackerel. Yeah. So the party, like you said, they had a party the day before. Everybody's there celebrating. House packed, yard packed, drinks popping, all this shit. And I'm sitting here looking at this shit like, what in the fuck is going on here? I'm like, these niggas celebrating me leaving. This is not a fucking
Taking
party.
Your
it's
place.
A fucking repast. It's a next? Funeral. I'm dying here. This is my death. I'm leaving. I'm being snatched away from my life and everything I know. And I'm not going to be able to enjoy anything. You know, I'm being punished and y'all are happy. And y'all are here, you know, celebrating. Like, what kind of twisted shit is that? You know what I'm saying? But people didn't see it like that. Me, I'm like stepping outside of the box. So the whole time the gathering is going on, I'm just like in an out-of-body experience, just looking down like, is this really happening? And I mean, I wasn't even there. It was like such a disconnect. You know what I mean? I just couldn't believe it. I just couldn't believe it. And they were there, I guess, to be supportive, but at the same time, it's like,
our people just don't know the system.
Yeah, y'all
they don't
celebrating
know.
This.
So,
amazing.
How many of your friends that you count were there for you from the beginning to the end to now? Besides your family, did it take you that long to think?
I had to think about it.
Wow.
I didn't think about it. Not very many. I'm going to count. I'm counting the letters.
You know what's crazy
I'm
about
counting
that
the money
question?
I put on my books. Motherfuckers is full of shit.
You know how many? You know what's crazy about that question? That we could sit here on a serious note and count.
It was less than 10 people.
We could count the people that was at the party.
Mm-hmm.
We could count the people that was at other parties. We could count the people we dressed and fed. But we can't count the people that was there for us in bad times.
Yeah, it was less than 10 people.
You know, and I less think that's a message that people should pay close attention to.
Everybody who's there for you when you're up and you're doing good, they're not going to be there for you when times are hard. They're going to disappear. They started dropping off like flies. You know, it was crazy. Scared to come around. And then some of them, you know, didn't want to be around and be associated. And some of them just straight, that's the type of people they are, just fucked up users.
So how long after you arrived in that prison did this product became a reality. The book. Stop playing and get your shit together.
It was on that ride to the prison. That's so, why I opened the book with that.
On the ride?
On the ride there. Dropping myself off the fucking prison. Like, where the fuck did they do that at? I'm taking myself to fucking jail. Like, what a fucking idiot.
Yes.
Like, what the fuck? How much real does that shit get? I'm so taking myself to jail.
Yeah.
I'm taking myself to jail. The mind fuckery that the feds put you through, it's strategic. It's good. It's effective.
Yeah, it's a mind game. Yeah. The feds, they play good.
They play good. It's effective.
You know, so you get into jail, you start writing.
Right.
Did the other convicts look at you different? Because, you know, when you're going for certain crimes, you know, it's either she got money, so you could do some things in there. You come in with a reputation, but somebody always won't try you.
Mm-hmm.
And people, this is not Orange is the New Black. This shit is real. And real some shit. Of these jails is real.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about, not the whole prison experience, but the first time one of them tried you.
Oh, it was the first weekend I got there. Mm. Fresh off the fucking boat. Mm.
Fresh meat.
Not the fucking boat. And I've never seen Orange is the Black, incidentally. I did read the book while I was incarcerated, but I've never saw the series. Surprisingly, I went to see a stage play a couple years back in Wilmington when it was like on tour. I'm not sure how close that stage play is to the series, but I've never sat and watched the series. I didn't think it was entertaining for me. In a sense, like, just, I'm like, what the fuck?
It's never going to be me.
I didn't want to, you know, watch it. Maybe one day I will, you know, just for shits and giggles and see. I've heard it's pretty accurate, though, the series itself. But that first weekend I got there, Swabby, they tried me. You know, you walk in, you walk up on the compound, everybody's looking and whispering. You know, all eyes are on you. They, you know, trying to figure out who you are, where you come from. They send the moles and, you know, the people up to go, hey, and what you doing and where you from and talking to you and picking you for information. You get a couple of them, and they're all from different, like, associations or whatever. They send the scouts out, you know, where you from, what you do, what you here for, you know, you got a man, a family, like they scout, they scamming, trying to figure out who you gonna roll with, who you gonna be with, and who can fucking use you at the end of the day, you know what I'm saying? And then you know, I kept it short and cute, you know what I mean? I'm, you know, well, you know, just whatever. I'm still like mad as fuck, still in the daze, like, really, why are you even coming to talk to me? But okay, you know, that weekend there's TV rooms on every unit, right? And I'm like, what the fuck? You know, I'm just like, they're walking around like a fucking zombie. I said, let me go in here and watch TV.
Ho, stop. TV rooms are the most respected rooms in any prison. TV rooms get you killed. Yeah.
Exactly. And I didn't know that. I didn't know that.
You cannot violate the rules of the TV rooms.
Right. So when I got there, like I said, people were talking and being, you know, nosy. But nobody had, like, grabbed me up yet to, like, kind of give me, like, the playbook, if you will. They just kind of, like,
they just gave you a handbook, not the playbook.
Right. They're not going to tell you how it goes in here, what's the rules. They just kind of watching you, like, to see. Like, it's, like, entertaining them or whatever, to see how you react. So I get into this TV room, and I sit down at a table. I don't even remember what was on TV. I just was sitting there looking up at it and just lost in my thoughts. And I remember, you know, feeling this against
big bubble.
My hip, like right here. So you see how the table is like right here. So I felt the table like hitting my side.
Big bubble.
Like, what the fuck? I'm like, did I get too close to the table? Like, let me move over, right?
Was it Debo?
It was a fuck. It was, you know, so I look up again. I'm feeling this tapping again. So I'm like, what the hell? And I look, and there it is.
Debo.
There's Big Bubba. There's Big Bubba. Straight backs, Butch Boondaggy, you know, classic, you know, prototype, sitting up there, standing by the table, looking at me after I done been hit twice. So I'm looking at her.
Eye candy.
Yeah, so she like, yeah, you got to move. You know what I mean? You can't sit here. This ain't your seat type shit. And I'm like, huh? So I'm still trying to figure out why the table hit me. What the fuck is going on? Who is this bitch? You know, all of this stuff. And she's talking to me. So, like, it didn't register. I'm going to be honest with you. I'm hearing her, but I'm like, huh? So she says, you can't sit here, something, something, something. And I'm like, what? So then the third time, she's, you rich punta, tell me, she starts talking Spanish, you got to get it.
The total disrespect.
Yes, total disrespect. Right? So now my street instincts kick in instantly, right? Because at this point, I'm just being, you know.
Did you whip that ass?
No. I didn't get a chance to actually lay my hands on her, right? But I did, so she did this thing. And I remember jumping up and throwing a table on her, throwing a couple chairs with some kicking and swinging, but it never, the contact really didn't go there because the girls started coming and grabbing. I remember somebody grabbing my right arm, and then I only had my left arm to throw some more chairs, and there was a lot of screaming, and they were dragging her out, and I'm yelling and saying whatever. And I'm telling everybody line the fuck up in the room who wanted next. Like, who the fuck y'all playing with? Like,
Hercules.
Y'all got me fucked up. Like, for real. Like, who the fuck? Like, are y'all serious right now? So the neighbor's like, oh, shit. Oh, no. Yeah, we good. The guards come running. So this was the test. So they drag her out. And then the guards come running in. So the guards, what's going on here? Yeah. I'm like, ain't nothing going on here. What you talking about? I sit back down. You know, the table got knocked over, something, but you know, it's all good. They're like, you shit, everybody else starts knitting and shit like that. They took her down the hall, you know what I mean? And then when the guards left, then they start coming out again, and I guess I was cool at that point because I had, I guess, stood up to her. And then when the guards came, they seen that I'm not a snitch, and I'm not. But that's neither here, you're not gonna fuck with me though. Like, so it was like a test. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And then me and old girl became friends.
Ooh.
Became friends.
It was
like my first initiation tester, if you will.
Yeah.
If you will.
So you go through that process, you come home.
Right.
How was it coming back home after 2 years? Did you notice that everything changed?
It was strange. Things had changed even in that, what you would think was short amount of time, but it was long as shit. The days are long, and you know the days are long in there. Everything had changed, even the house, you know, things that I had left weren't in the same conditions. People hadn't been around. I saw again the effects of the absence of the so-called community and the people that I had. They didn't come through on their promises that they had made in terms of support and just being involved and being around. So I saw the dynamics of that within, you know, the household and my family. And it was different. And then I had to go to the halfway house, too. So if you want the tea, though, you know, I got it in on make sure things still work, but you know, did that, and had to go to the halfway house, and it was weird. Music was different. I had no idea, what the fuck people were listening to. It just sounded like fucking outer space shit, like, what is this? Technology had changed in that short amount of time. You know, the content on TV, what was in the news, what was going on, even the cost of, living wages had changed. Things were different. You know, you never realize how fast the world is moving on the outside when you're in there and you're stagnant. And that was pretty devastating.
Did you find that you had a whole different perspective on life and people that you once respected and trusted, like you look at them now like
absolutely
even family members.
I had a lot of boundaries in place and still do. I don't trust people. I don't fuck with them. I can see right through them, their bullshit, you know, with like laser eyes like Superman. You can see that they're, you know, what they're about.
Because prison teach you how to read people
like a motherfucker.
I mean, me and you can have a disagreement in prison, but we can become the best friends because we got something in common that we both know, like, not to cross them boundaries, right? So you come home, 2 years, it feel like 20 years, I'm guaranteeing you it does, right? And now you gotta rebuild yourself.
Gotta rebuild myself.
You know, did you find it hard that people was kind of skeptic to accept you because of what you went in for? Or was it easy to say, for people to say, hey, I got you? Or did you have to completely demonstrate to people like, yeah, I went in for that, but I'm also this? I mean, because the title of your book says it all, from CEO.
So, I did not have the support that I thought I would have from the people that said they would look out for me when I came home. It was only a small, and I can count on this hand, amount of people that looked out for me when I came home and actually came through on their promises, but then I still had to put the work in. So it was more so a phone call, you know, or a suggestion to go here and go see this person, that person, but it wasn't like somebody held my hand and walked me in somewhere. I said to get out my bed, go do the work, you know, follow through and do the execution and the action plans. You got to work, you know, and you're not to expect anything, but considering the people that I fed, you would think that I would just walk into a situation, you know, and, you know, money's here waiting on me, clothes, an opportunity for a job or business just like sitting there, like, no, none of that. None of that red carpet shit was done. It was very, very, very minimal. Yes, I was concerned that people wouldn't accept me or trust me because of the circumstances for fraud and all that kind of stuff. And people would look at me funny and judge me before even, you know, giving me an opportunity. So yes, that was a concern of mine. And the craziest thing happened. So, and that was before anybody helped me. I had to help myself. So when I get to the halfway house, my first night there, I started applying for jobs as soon as I got in the halfway house, and I sent an email over to a couple places, and they responded the next day, and I got an interview. So I'm like, shit, yeah, I got an interview. Yes, within 24 hours of being in the halfway house. In my first interview, was for an accountant position at a hotel chain, right? So I went to prison for this shit, and now I'm being interviewed. So they didn't know at the time that, you know, that I applied. They didn't ask.
They didn't run you through.
Right, they didn't run me through yet. So I remember going to my interview and just talking with the guy. It was a white guy, and, you know, going over my skill set and things and such. And I said, he said, this does seem like a good match. I said, it does to me too, but I need to know if you extend opportunities to people with a criminal history, because I have a criminal history. And he's like, well, it depends on what it is, this and that, but, you know, yeah, we'll give you a chance. I was like, wow, okay, that's what's up. So they ran everything, or whatever the case may be, in human resources, and they called me and said, you know, we're going to go ahead and give you a shot. And these were total strangers. Nothing to do with anybody that had already knew,
with that say, right, because your stories will be featured, like, every week. We don't want you to give it up.
Okay.
You know. Yeah, cliffhanger people. Sorry. she got to have something for next week. But we left off at the hotel and the people that gave her the shot. That's what we're going to pick up next week. But before we go to that, I want you to really talk about that product, because I think that that's very, very important. A lot of time people go to prison and they don't think they could come home and rebuild themselves. I mean, you've done a great job rebuilding yourself. You've done a great job representing yourself. And what I mean by that is, in circles where people with no felonies probably can't get in,
you're right, that's crazy, right?
You know, so tell us a little bit about this. Where can we pick it up? How can people support you? Support what you're doing today. And then next week, I promise, we're going to pick up on that hotel. I know y'all want to hear that story. And we, you know what? We might promote the hotel, because if it's a place that give people second chance, we want to promote them.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about that.
So the book is Sell to CEO, Stop Playing and Get Your Shh Together. It's available on Barnes & Noble, Amazon.com, or directly on my website, which is selltoceo.com, sell, CELL2TOCEO.com. This book is about mindset shifting, motivation, and strategies and action plan to getting a legitimate business started. This book is about self-accountability and embracing that. It's about tackling those challenges within yourself. And for some people, the cell may be like you and I, the four walls of the institution that we were in. But for others is to sell in the four walls of your mind. The bondage.
So where can people contact you for booking?
For bookings, they can contact me on all social media platforms at Coach Dawn Michelle, COACH Coach Dawn, DAWN Michelle, MICHELLE, and or to my direct website, which is CoachDawnMichelle.com. CoachDawnMichelle.com. I'm available for bookings for speaking, for book signings. I do corporate trainings, DEI, and workplace ethics trainings.
And where can people find your book?
Again, you can find my book on Amazon.com, BarnesandNobles.com, and SellToCEO.com. The book has its own website and its own landing pages. You can order directly from that as well.
So how does it feel? The world premiere of Stop Playing and Get Your Shit Together podcast on DBI Live. How does it feel? It feels amazing. It feels good.
I like being able to express myself and share my story. It's very therapeutic, too.
Yes.
You know what I mean? It feels good to be able to share and know that I'm serving others again, but in the right way. And I look forward to being that vessel of strength and hope for other people that need it, being that encouragement.
To me, as co-owner of DBI Media, I thought it was important. I thought it was almost like a gift to have an addition. This is a woman's voice, because sometimes women's incarcerated get left behind.
Yeah.
Their issues. When people speak about incarceration, they're talking about males. They're not talking about women's. And you know, and here we got somebody that know the street life, but also know the corporate life. That's a dangerous mind, people. Why? Because this person right here could show you how to build your corporation from the bottom up and make you be successful. This is why we need to support her book. And again, she will be featured on Fat Life Radio every Friday. Time to be announced. But she will also be on all the major platforms, Apple, Spotify, anywhere you get your podcast. You would know to stop playing and get your shit together,
y'all. That's right. Peace out.
We see you next week.
Come get with me, y'all. Looking forward to it.
That was another episode of Get Your Shh Together featuring Dawn Michelle Chamberlain. Tune in every week on FatLifeRadioStation.com or go to all platforms. We appreciate your support and we hope to see you next week. True Crime Radio is brought to you by DBI Media, FetLifeRadioStation.com, and Prison Production. This episode is produced by yours truly, Joey DeVille, Dawn Michelle Chamberlain, and executive producer, Pulitzer Prize winner, Suave Gonzalez. Until next time.